Kia ora. This program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Kia ora and hello. I've been asked to tell you about No Labels, the radio show for, by, and about people living with disabilities. The show offers interviews and news about the disability sector in Aotearoa, New Zealand. On Wellington's Access Radio 106.1 FM. Find us on Facebook or go to www.accessradio.org.nz. No Labels, our voice for you on Access Radio.
Hello and welcome, I'm Mike Gawley. On today's show, I'm catching up with the latest information on a disorder that's responsible for impairing thousands of Kiwis, Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder, or FASD. And to do that, I'm joined by Lee Henderson, who chairs the FASD CAN Advocacy Network, and youth advocate Byron Jones. So, Lee Henderson, you are the chair of FASD CAN. Firstly, can you tell you what FASD is?
So FASD stands for Fetal Alcohol Spectrum Disorder. It's a brain-based disability which arises from exposure to alcohol during pregnancy. It's a lifelong disorder. To be diagnosed, you have to have severe defects in three different brain domains like executive functioning, memory, communication, a whole range of physical. And FASD is also associated as a whole body disorder, a number of different physical disabilities associated with it.
So what kind of disabilities would they be, Lee?
Sorry?
The physical disabilities. What kind of physical disabilities are we talking about?
Quite often hearing and sight loss, but it can affect multiple orders. Alcohol's a very powerful teratogen, and so affects organ development, so heart, often bone structure. So there's 436 comorbidities to FASD.
So it happens because the mother-to-be is drinking too much alcohol, and so the alcohol affects her fetus.
Yeah, it's not just too much. We don't know if there's any safe level. And the effect is probably most important in those first 8 weeks of pregnancy when the brain is being laid down. And often that's the time when people haven't recognised the pregnancy. So they may well stop after that time. Most people stop after that time. But the danger arises from drinking in those early stages.
Thinking back to my own awareness of FASD, I only came about because of Taina Pora.
Right.
And the case where he was wrongly convicted of a rape and murder. He did not commit, but because he confessed, they found that his, again, executive functioning, his ability to think about what was going on, was obviously impaired.
Yeah, so confabulation is one of those attributes that are often shown in people with FASD, where they make up information, which is what he did. But of course, actually, beyond that, because that's 10 years ago now, I guess, there's been a number of appeal cases of people with FASD where their sentences have been overridden, now recognising what FASD does to the brain and how that may affect their ability to think logically and not commit crimes.
So what gives rise to your assertion that this is the biggest cause of disability in New Zealand than anything else?
We don't have a prevalence study in New Zealand, but there are studies in a number of other countries, Canada, the US, the UK, Sweden, and we can look at, there's been a number of research studies looking at those levels and their levels of drinking and looking at New Zealand. And so on that basis, the Ministry of Health estimates 3 to 5% of the population have FASD. So 60,000 children under the age of 18, nearly all not diagnosed, which puts it more common than autism.
So what do you think gives rise to this lack of awareness on the part of the community and policymakers generally?
It's amazing. it's staggering that we've had a number of eminent people, Judge Beecroft, Paula Tesorero, and Disability Commissioner, who have raised the issue, who've talked about FASD being a tsunami, it's a real head in the sand. People don't understand it. It is hidden. You can meet a person with FASD. Most of them don't have an intellectual disability, and you may not realise that it's there. There's also great stigma attached to it, a blame on parents that it's bad parenting, a blame on the children for their behaviour. So it's a complex issue, and we just hope that will change.
Mm-hmm. So how much confidence do you have that things will all change?
Well, step by step. We want change faster, but last year a FASD action plan was launched with cross-agency support from a number of the agencies, not all of them, and that is some significant investment into training professionals, to improving diagnosis levels and capability, but it still at this stage does not address access to disability support and that care that's needed around families to stop to help people to raise their children the best possible way.
So what kind of help did you find that you had or not have?
Our son was diagnosed in his mid-teens. He possibly is one of those that's fairly deeply hidden. And ironically, for us and for others, it's involvement in the justice system that often perhaps promotes the diagnosis of FASD. We haven't had much, but we have now. The organisation FASD Can, over the last 13 years, has really raised the level of support for families. It's all mainly done on a volunteer basis, but we do run training, raise awareness within families about how to alter the parenting to accommodate those brain differences.
Now, FASD CAN, can you explain what the CAN element is? Because
So that the CAN stands for FASD Caregiver Action Network, and that was set up as a motto, I guess. People with FASD can succeed if they're given the right support. So two aspects to that. So we started out very much as a caregiver support network because that was critical for people to realise that they were living in absolute isolation, no support, and that there were others around them. But we have expanded from there. We have professionals across all spectrum, medical, education, so on, within our membership. And we now do training, professional training, train a lot of mental health professionals, train education and so on. So,
you talked about different agencies now. I wonder if those agencies would be police, corrections, justice.
So the agencies that are quite involved are Rangatamariki, because 50% of children entering care are thought to have FASD. Corrections, we don't know the levels, but internationally, high or disproportionate number of people who are in corrections facilities have FASD. Police have been quite active in doing training and will do more as part of the support group. Education hasn't really signed on to the FASD action plan, but they're, and one of the aspects, of course, is the need for teachers and assistants to be more aware of FASD.
What kind of resourcing is there for support for young people in school who've got FASD?
Unless you've got an intellectual disability, which is 20%, there's none. Occasionally, those that have very severe behaviours, and we're talking about, you know, six-year-olds who are violent or threatening to jump off school roofs, then there will be support through the Ministry of Education. But to access things like AWS funding is very, very unlikely. A number of people have tried that with no success. And often the kids fall out of school That's the consequence. Or their parents have to homeschool them, the parents have to give up work because they don't know that their child is going to be going full-time to school. There's lots of repercussions.
Now, this year there's going to be a charter school designed primarily around people with autism. Would that benefit people with FASD too, do you think?
I think absolutely. I think there's a lot in common, the bullying that comes with both of those. There's a higher level of autism among people with FASD, I think threefold the general population. But just that tolerance for those brain differences that would come, absolutely.
Mm. Well, talking about education, I know that you were quite, well, very pleased about this latest decision from the Human Rights Tribunal about education and support for people in education. Can you explain a bit about that and why you're so excited by it?
Well, the United Nations Convention on Disabled People effectively said that New Zealand should be being paid heed to the convention by entitling children to a fair education alongside others. So, however, and FASD is obviously one of those where children often fall outside the system. So we hoped that that would have a big effect in terms of increasing the ability of people with FASD to stay within the mainstream school system.
So what kind of advocacy have you had to ministers, politicians generally, and agencies about FASD?
We've knocked on as many doors as we can, who will open them to us, which is not always easy. Minister Ducey is the minister covering neurodiversity and with responsibility for FASD. 90% of people with FASD have mental health issues and a greatly increased risk of suicide. So we do have, he launched the FASD action plan with involving us, which was good. Education has been much, much harder to engage with. And Minister for Children we've spoken to as well, particularly raising our concerns about boot camps and young offenders and appropriate approaches and punishment not being effective for those with FASD in that form.
So what do you think is lacking about boot camps that not to deal with FASD and its effects?
I think that you have to understand the brain. The brain works slower. They say a 10-second brain in a 1-second world. Often in a boot camp situation, it's this. It's very hard. Some of the parade ground stuff, you know, having to follow particular patterns and keep those patterns in your head. But also, it's thinking that punishment will work, and one of the things about FASD is that people can't understand the consequences of their action. So punishment, you know, won't necessarily stop them from coming back. The interesting thing is a study on the way in New Zealand at the moment on incidents of FASD in youth justice. And that will give us some information on how critical this is and what needs to be done. In Australia, 40% of people in our youth justice facility have FASD, so a major contributor.
Thank you, Lee. So, Byron Jones, can you tell me your FASD story? When did it start?
So my story began really before my diagnosis, actually, when I was having problems at primary school, and those continued into intermediate and the beginning of high school. And I went to Auckland to Dr. Valerie McGinn and had my diagnosis there. And since then, it's been a long journey that's led to our new whānau, Te Tuki, and all of us coming together from across the country.
I understand you've become quite an advocate for younger people, or you're a younger person being quite an advocate. So tell me, what kind of things are you saying to policymakers decision makers?
So mainly I'm saying that FASD needs to be recognised as what it is, a full disability that affects lives in a lot of ways, and that needs to be taken into consideration, and policy needs to be changed and amended to help and support those individuals and the family and the families caring for them as well.
Thank you, Byron. That's excellent. Okay. Now, I understand you've got rap's your favourite kind of music.
It was definitely, and I even as like in high school, I was doing recording a bit of my own raps and stuff like that. But recently, I'm on a new journey where I've been coming to Christ and
amen.
So I'm listening to a lot of worship now. So a lot of stuff like you would hear on Life FM is basically me now. Yeah,
brilliant. Thanks, Byron. That's FASD Youth Advocate Byron Jones wrapping up today's show, my first for the new year. And with him, you heard Lee Henderson, chair of the FASD CAN Advocacy Network. Until next time, I'm Mike Gorley, looking forward to your company then. And let's go out with Lee Henderson's nominated track. That's Emmylou Harris with the Wrecking Ball. Ka kite anō.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard. Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.